Well, good evening. I'm going to be preaching to you today. If anyone doesn't know me, my name is Wayne. I'm part of the leadership team here. And we're going to be looking at Psalm 13 this evening. But I have a question for you to think about first. We have a nice, well, maybe not a nice picture, a picture of a chap who's clearly in great despair and distress on the one half, and a nice, happy, smiley person on the other side. And I wonder which is the image that we would most often associate with what it looks like in our mind to be a Christian. I would guess probably for most of us, we think of Christians, they're nice, smiley, happy people. They have lots of things to be joyous about. And part of that is probably because actually when we're putting ourselves out and making ourselves known to people, we tend to use pictures of nice, happy, smiley people. That's the kind of image that we give off. So it's no surprise that we think that Christians look like that. Maybe not exactly like that, but happy and smiley. So what happens if at the moment you're the guy who's crying in his hands and is full of despair and doesn't really know what to do with his life? And as much as you cry out to God, it just feels like you're getting no answer. You're not sure, to be honest, whether God is even listening to you anymore at all, whether he's just wandered off and left you to it. What do we do if we're that person, or feeling like that, when we're used to a diet of thinking that Christians are happy folk who are smiling? Well, we're going to be looking at Psalm 13 tonight, and that starts at that very place. It starts with someone who is crying out to God and just can't see him there. And we will read it now. It goes, "How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me." Well, it probably doesn't take much looking at that psalm, just the opening words, to realise that Psalm 13 is very much a psalm of lament. It is a psalm of sadness, of pouring out our hearts in despair to God. And the book of Psalms as a whole is pretty much a songbook for all of life for God's people. So in there we find psalms for times of rejoicing, for times of marvelling at God's creation, for times of repentance, for times of confession, and of times of laments, and Psalm 13 is one of those. Much like Psalm 12 was last week, another psalm of lament, looking at the evil people in the world who seek to undo God's people, and crying out to God in the midst of that. Well, Psalm 13 is a slightly different kind of lament, isn't it? In a way, there's no clear cause of what the person is crying out for. It's not obvious that there's an external thing going on particularly at all. It's a cry of, well, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? It's the cry of someone who feels forgotten and abandoned, and their prayers seem unanswered. God doesn't seem to be answering. There doesn't seem to be any end of what's coming up. So when we're in that situation, well, does that mean we've failed in some way? Does that mean I've done something wrong as a Christian and God has turned his face away from me and left me alone? Does it mean I'm not really a Christian at all if I'm feeling like that? How do we deal with that? Well, actually, there's a clue in the fact that this appears in the book of Psalms. This book of songs, which is about providing songs for every part of human life. And part of that is a psalm that talks about feeling abandoned by God. And actually, it's far from the only place in the Bible where we get that come up. I'm sure by now most of you have had the book of Job come to mind, where Job suffers a series of catastrophic events, with seemingly no explanation. He cries out to God, but doesn't get an answer. Not right until the very end of the book. So he spends an uncertain amount of time not knowing what's going on. Psalm 22 has very similar words in it. It opens like this. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. Or Psalm 88, verse 14. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? See, it actually seems that far from this being a kind of freak occurrence and something that's kind of outside of the Christian experience that makes you not really a Christian, that actually this is part of being God's people. God's provided the words of a psalm like this so that when we are feeling like this, well, there's a song in Psalms that echo those feelings that we can read and take some encouragement from. Feeling abandoned by God and as if he has forgotten you seems to be a part of being a Christian. If you're around for long enough, the Bible almost gives the impression that you will go through this at some point. At some point in your life, these words will echo what you are feeling. Doesn't mean that you've necessarily done something wrong. It doesn't mean that you've suddenly not become a Christian anymore. This is part of Christian life. We may feel like this. And so these kind of psalms help to kind of forewarn us of that, to keep us on the lookout that this might happen. But as we go on, hang on a moment. this is part of the Christian life. We may feel like this. And actually, when you think about the nature of David's complaint, David's feeling, as he goes, "How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart?" It's that feeling of being utterly alone. His thoughts aren't bringing him any comfort. He needs God's input. And actually, what he's seeing is actually the loss of what is most valuable to him. What is greatest to him? Maybe his greatest fear, or usually our greatest fear, is to lose that thing that we value the most. And for David, it's God's presence. See, if you're not a Christian, you can't cry out like this. You can't despair that you are forsaken by God and miss him in your life if you don't believe in him, if you don't value him at all. This is inherently a Christian lament. I mean, an atheist might similarly cry, "How long will this go on? How long will these awful things happen to me? I can see no end to it." But there can be no cry of, "Well, how long until you turn your face back to me, God? How long until I feel your presence again?" This is definitely a Christian lament. So if you do feel like this, when you feel like this in the future perhaps, well, don't let yourself feel that makes you less of a Christian or not a Christian at all. This is part of the Christian life. Don't feel ashamed of feeling that way. But there's a very important thing that we remember in the midst of this. It's that typical thing of when you're in trouble and in a bad situation, time just stretches out. It feels as if the situation is going to go on forever. Quite often you get this kind of blinker tunnel vision. You cannot see a possible way out. You cannot see an end of it. And that gets echoed, doesn't it? With the how long, how long, how long is this going to go on? But there's also something that's very important to remember, that actually the words here are David's perspective when he is suffering. How long will you forget me forever means that David feels like he is forgotten. It doesn't mean that he is forgotten. It'll be a hard thing to realize when you're in the midst of this situation, But God does not forget his people. He does not leave us alone. There might be a time when he maybe doesn't speak as audibly as we are used to him. There might be a time when actually because of how we're acting or how we're feeling, we just don't pick up on what he's saying. God is speaking to us and we just don't notice it at all. But he is still there. And we get reminded of that in his promise to his people in the book of Deuteronomy. This is Deuteronomy 31 verse 6. God says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. So we're on the verge of going into the promised land. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. And we find those almost exact words echoed again in Hebrews 13. A reminder that God does not leave you or forsake you. So though it may feel at times that we are abandoned by God, as if he is not listening, as if we're praying and it's just not going anywhere, God will not leave you or forsake you. That is the truth. Even though it may be hard to see at the time. So then what's the purpose of this suffering? Why is David being left to feel this way? Why as Christians might we go through this and feel that we are being left alone and have those feelings that God is not there? For David, there's a clue of what happens as we get to verses 3 and 4. David goes, look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say I have overcome him and my foes will rejoice when I fall. What David realizes is that without God's answer, well, his eyes will lose the light of life. Without God, then he will die. His enemies will overcome him. They will rejoice in his falling. Through his despair, through feeling that God is not there, David in this psalm sees that actually he is utterly dependent on God. He is utterly weak. His own thoughts in his head are doing him no good. He's wrestling with them day in, day out, and there is still sorrow. He sees that without God, the light of life in his eyes will go out and there will be death. David seeing just how weak he is by himself. And actually, I can't help but remember as I've been reading through this, what we've been learning in Corinthians as we've been going through the morning services over the last few weeks. As Russell's pointed out again and again, that one of the requirements to be someone who tells others about God is to be weak. And to know that it's only in God's strength that we can do anything. Those qualifications of being that professional who will share the gospel. Our weakness. And so perhaps during a time when it feels as if God isn't there, it feels as if our prayers are going nowhere, yet we still see that we need him. That we cry out, that we see just how weak we are. Or perhaps we're being prepared for service. To accept God's help. At a later time. That's certainly the feeling that we get from David in this psalm. He sees his utter dependence, his utter weakness. And that's where God works. And then suddenly in verse 5, kind of almost out of nowhere, we get this, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise for he has been good to me. It almost feels like a different psalm's been smushed onto the end of it, doesn't it? We open the beginning, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? And then we end with, I will sing the Lord's praise. Well, how on earth can David rejoice? How on earth can there be this sudden turnaround in his feelings? Has God suddenly answered? Has there been suddenly some kind of road to Damascus appearance? Is there light or God speaking? And actually, there's no indication that that's happened at all. Actually, it closely parallels Psalm 12 from last week that you might remember, where you get to the end of the psalm and the evil are still in the world. They are still telling lies about God's people and trying to cut them off. Yet David was able to rejoice. And in Psalm 12, he was able to rejoice because he remembered God's integrity, God's name that cannot change and that means that God can be relied upon. There was no change in bringing justice immediately to the evildoers. But David could remember an attribute of God and rejoice in that. And I think something very similar is happening here in Psalm 13. I don't suppose God suddenly has answered clearly. David probably still does have the thought quite often when he prays that there is no clear answer. Maybe still echoing in his head are those calls of how long is this going to go on until something changes. But I will trust in your unfailing love. What allows David to rejoice at the end is what he knows of what God has done before. My heart rejoices in your salvation. David knows that he has been saved by God. He knows that the Lord has been good to him before. And so David can look back at those things. He can remember God's goodness. And he can trust that God will be good again. Even though he doesn't know when that will be. And that kind of goodness might just be that kind of day-to-day goodness that we see expressed via God's people. So I expect most of you have either been the recipient of or have seen one of these kind of things happening. Where it's an anonymous parcel of money that arrives to someone who's in dire straits. Whether it's food being offered, help with moving, taking the kids out for an afternoon when someone knows that you're at your wit's end and you could just do with some peace. All those times that God is good to you. All those small things that add up during the week, during your life. Well, they're the kind of things that allow you to look back and say, well, God's been good to me. So I can sing his praise. Even though I can't see any of that goodness at the moment. And his supreme goodness is in that verse 5, isn't it? David is rejoicing in God's salvation. David knows that God has saved him and offered salvation. And actually, this is at a time when, in our minds, salvation is we immediately think of Christ. Well, David wouldn't have seen that clearly then. To David, this idea of salvation would have maybe been a half-glimpsed thing. He wouldn't have seen the full reality. But we have seen Christ come. We were being reminded this morning by Mike that our hope for the future isn't something imagined. It isn't something kind of made up or fanciful. It is based on the reality that Christ has died and risen and that we've been given God's Spirit as a guarantee. We can look back and see that Christ has died and risen. And that's God's salvation. We can remember his goodness there. And so when we don't feel his goodness now, we can look back on that. That fact, that thing that happened that is a fixed point in history, that nothing can change. That God sent his son to die for his people. And actually, I've been seeing endless parallels in Corinthians. Paul says something very similar in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. I'll just flick to it now. This is in verse 8. Where he's reminding people of the difficulties that they've gone through. He writes, "We do not want you to be misinformed, brothers, about the hardships that we suffered in the province of Asia. Well, we are under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, that we despaired even of life." Well, it's easy to see that having the same kind of feeling as those opening two or three verses of Psalm 13, isn't it? Pushed to the point where he despaired even of life. How long will this go on, Lord? How long am I going to have to go through these hardships? Indeed, in our hearts, we felt the sentence of death. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. Who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we will set our hope that he will continue to deliver us as you help us by your prayers. See, Paul's comfort in the midst of horrible persecution and hardship and suffering was the God who raises the dead, who brings life to the dead, who raised Christ. And remembering that he had saved Paul before, and so he could be relied upon to do it again in the future. It's very much that feel that David has at the end of Psalm 13, isn't it? In the midst of despair, in the midst of hardship, in the midst of feeling that God has left us, we can look back, remember the God who brings life to the dead, who raised Christ, and will surely raise us with him one day. And remember that God has been good to me. And there's one good point to, one useful thing to point out is that remembering those good things is so much harder when you're actually in difficulty. Actually, it's hard enough from day to day when you're going through them, when you get to the end of the day and you kind of forget all those small things that have happened. So practice remembering those things now. Try and build that habit of remembering the ways that God has been good for you. Those small things that make you rejoice during the day, at the end of the day, during the week. So that when you reach that point, if you're around long enough as a Christian, when you cry out, well, will you forget me, Lord? How long are you going to hide your face from me? You can remember those things that God has done for you. His goodness to you. And so share that rejoicing that David has at the end. My heart rejoices in your salvation, Lord. Even though I'm going through horrible difficulty at the moment, even though I can't see an end of it, I know that you have been good to me.